From the Thinking Out Loud studios, it's the Thinking Out Loud podcast with Kevin and Kyle, the podcast that exists to help you navigate the culture of today from a biblical perspective
and to help you grow in your relationship with God.
God has commissioned and called you to be a light in this culture. The only way you can do that is to know the truth.
No matter what circumstance you're facing, no matter what season of life that you're in, if you truly want to find success in that season,
you are going to have to go back to the simple question of, what does God say about me in this moment?
There's no shortage of information in this culture, but there is a shortage of truth.
Welcome back to the Thinking Out Loud podcast. My name is Kevin Wilson.
I'm Kyle.
And we are excited to be back with you for another week. We're just coming off of some great podcasts that we've had in the past few weeks and just had some good feedback from you guys. And so we're really excited to be back with you for another week. This week, we're going to talk about kind of a heavy topic, a topic that's not normally talked about, especially in the church, something that's kind of shied away from, but it's something that is extremely important that we bring awareness to and that we talk about. And you know, as well as I do on this show, we do not shy away from the difficult topics. We believe that all of the topics that we talk about that are difficult are necessary. And so today we're going to talk about domestic violence, and we're going to talk about that in the church. You know, we know it happens outside of the church, but it also happens in the church, and a lot of people are not aware of that. I don't think that they realize it is as prevalent as it is, and it's something that our men and women, they need a voice, and this is prominently, you know, predominantly, it is women who are suffering this, but men also, you know, they have a women who are abusing them as well. But today we're going to talk predominantly about the women who suffer in this area. And so it's super important. And we always say that when we're not a complete expert at something, even though we're both pastors and we have counseled people in these areas, we wanted to bring on an expert, somebody who's been through it, someone who is an advocate for other people to have a voice. And so today we have Doris Rivera Black. She's a speaker. She's an advocate. She's an author. Her book, Clothed in Strength, you're definitely going to want to pick that book up. And she talks about her story in that book. And she has an incredible story. And you're going to hear that story today. You may have seen her on Oprah and a lot of other places where she has shared her story. But we have Doris on the show today. Doris, thanks for coming on to the Thinking Out Loud podcast.
Thank you both for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. And so let's talk and let's jump right into this domestic violence. And, you know, when you were younger, I'm sure you heard of domestic violence when you were in maybe high school or something like that. But what was your sense? I mean, did you really understand that term or really understand how prevalent it was in our society?
That's a great question. I actually did not understand a whole lot about domestic violence growing up. In my mind growing up, I thought domestic violence meant physical violence. I thought it meant, you know, if a spouse hurt another spouse, you know, by slapping, hitting, punching, roughing them up, that to me was domestic violence. I never knew that it included any other things such as emotional damage and psychological manipulation and so many other things that domestic violence includes. But to me growing up, I thought, well, you know, if they're not physically hurting each other, then there's no domestic violence there. And that's kind of what I understood growing up about domestic violence. And actually that carried into my adult years too, through when I went through what I went through. When I went through my situation, it wasn't physical so much. The physical portion happened at the end. It was a lot of emotional abuse, psychological intimidation. So yeah. That's a great question, because a lot of people misunderstand that as being, they hear the word violence Mm-hmm. And they think of it as that physical violence when there's so much more to it than just the violence, the physical violence.
Yeah, I think as Americans, we kind of, you know, we watch Cops. And we see, you know, we have this picture of the, you know, the guy standing, you know, with a beer in his hand on the porch yelling at his wife while the cops are approaching the door. And we like, you know, and she's screaming, saying he hit me. And I mean, that's our view of what domestic violence is. But it's so much more. And I think there are so many victims out there that are silent. They feel like they don't have a voice, or they feel like that they can't speak up. They're suffering. And I think about this during the pandemic. One of the things that I've been just very concerned about is, you know, when things are shut down, people are stuck and kind of just stuck inside with their abusers, you know, whether it be sexual or physical in some other type of way, or mental, whatever the case may be. You know, people are kind of, in a sense, trapped with these people, whereas before, maybe they could get some relief when they went to work or something like that. And so it's something that we should be talking about even more. So let's get into your story a little bit. So, I mean, you were kidnapped by your estranged husband and sexually assaulted. Like, just can you walk us through kind of, and you were actually a police officer at this particular time. Right. So walk us through this, what happened here.
Sure. So, I'll try to make it to where I'm not drawing it out, because there's so much that I can share.
Feel free.
But, you know, when I met this man, I was a very young mother of two little girls and had recently split up with my first husband, and we were going to be going through divorce and all of that. And, you know, I married really young. I was 18 years old when I had my first baby. And, you know, we were a military family, and, you know, we're just so young and immature. We didn't know how to do this thing called marriage. Mm-hmm. And, but I remember, because I grew up very Catholic, and I remember being told, you don't divorce. You just don't divorce. This is something you don't do. It is a sin if you divorce. And there's a lot of shame that was taught to me growing up, not purposefully, because I love my mom and dad. They meant the best for me. However, there was a lot of sort of this shame and guilt type of religion that was taught to me. And so already when this marriage failed, my girl's dad and I split up and we kind of gave up. This was sort of a layer of shame that I had. And so here I am. I was very insecure growing up. I did experience, unfortunately, some sexual abuse as a child by a very trusted family member who's no longer here with us. So there was a lot of emotional baggage, I guess, that I did not confront as a child. I didn't confront it even as a young adult. It didn't surface until later, until I was in this abusive relationship. And so I was left shamed. I was left feeling like, what is wrong with me? Why can't I make life work? And then here comes Mr. Charming. And he was pursuing me at work. I was working at this place trying to make ends meet, because now I'm single mom, that kind of thing. And, you know, I kind of sensed that he was interested, but I was like, no, I'm not even divorced yet. Like, I can't do this. And, but he was so friendly and so sweet. And I was like, oh my gosh, I've never been treated this way. This is so different. And so I made it known to him, I'm not interested in a relationship. This is what's happening. And he was very respectful of that, but he continued to pursue me in not so obvious ways. So for instance, he'd come to work one day and he'd be like, oh my goodness, I cooked these amazing chicken tacos and I brought you some, you know. Or he'll come another day and say, hey, I know you have two little girls. I saw these little teddy bears and I thought your girls would like them. And so just subtly, just little things here and there. And I was like, wow, this, wow, this is amazing. And so slowly but surely, I started falling. I don't know if it was infatuated at the time or I thought in love. this man. And he was just the kindest, sweetest man that I'd ever met. And so we started actually talking more, and it turned into a relationship. So that relationship quickly, you know, it went fast. And I kept, you know, I remember him telling me, "You're going to be my wife one day. You're going to be my wife one day." And I was like, "Well, we'll see what happens," that kind of thing. And sure enough, just short of a year after divorcing and all of that, just short of a year. And just to make it clear, I was not following the Lord on any of this at the time. Actually, at this point in my life, I had distanced myself from the Lord. It had been something that I kind of put away. You know, I had this sort of this fear of God, right? Because that's what it was instilled in me. But I said, you know, I don't want to have anything to do with that God of wrath. Right. So I kind of just tucked him away on a shelf somewhere and just didn't have a relationship with God at the time. So I just wanted to make that clear. Not that those of us that are Christians are perfect in making decisions anyways, but just wanted to make that clear. So we ended up getting into this relationship. He was so wonderful. He was wonderful to my girls. He was wonderful to me. He treated me like, I say, porcelain doll. Like, he was so tender and sweet with me. And, you know, I fell in love. I fell in love, and we ended up getting married. And like I said, just short of a year, we get married, and things began to kind of subtly change. Little things here and there that just did not make sense, but I couldn't quite put my finger on it. Sometimes we go through things and it's those things that make you go, right? I think we've all experienced that.
Sure.
And, but you can't quite you can't explain it away. And so those are the feelings I was getting. And there were things that were inconsistent with the stories he would tell me about his ex-wife and his ex-girlfriends and his situation with, you know, like with work. And he was in the Marines, and there was just so many inconsistencies that I couldn't quite put them together. And in my mind, I was thinking, well, no, he's great. Like, why am I so worried? You know, he treats me well. He helps around the house. You know, he helps, he cooks, he cleans, he does all these wonderful things, right? And so I thought this was the perfect relationship. And so one thing to note is I grew up in a Puerto Rican family, and which I love the culture, but in the Puerto Rican culture, it's very common to where the husband makes most of the decisions, and it's not abuse. I want to clarify that it's a cultural thing, right? My mom was perfectly fine with it. She never had an issue. She was the one that cooked and cleaned and all that. My dad would work, and he kind of made the decisions, and it was more of a cultural thing. It wasn't an abusive situation. But I remember growing up thinking, it's not gonna happen in my marriage when I get older.
Right.
So, my husband's gonna help me clean. My husband's gonna help. You know, that kind of like feistiness growing up.
Sure.
And so when I was in this relationship with this man, he did those things. He helped me cook. He helped me clean. He put in work around the house. We both worked. He helped take care of the kids. And so I was like, this is perfect. Right. But little did I know that was kind of part of his facade, right? Because, you know, something that a lot of people don't realize is that abusers, especially when it's an abuser that is narcissistic, that kind of has sociopathic tendencies, they're very strategic, right? They're very intentional. And so there's a grooming process that happens, sort of like a sexual abuser when they abuse a child or someone in a position of trust. There's a grooming phase where they want that person to trust them, where they want that person to think of them as their world. And this is exactly what he was doing in this relationship. And it was very strategic. So when I finally started seeing some major signs of, hey, this is not okay. This can't be okay. This isn't healthy. This, why am I feeling this way? Why am I feeling so broken? What is going on? I was in love with him and I didn't want to break off this marriage. I had already failed in my mind at that first marriage. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I cannot have a second marriage. My family's going to think I'm a failure. I can't do this. Mm. So I tried so hard to keep this marriage together. But unfortunately, when you're in an abusive relationship, when somebody is literally trying to control everything about this marriage in a manipulative way, in a kind of an evil way sometimes, it's difficult to correct that marriage. It's difficult to heal that marriage unless that person doing the abuse can actually take responsibility for that and say, I need help. Mm-hmm. If they can take responsibility, true responsibility, and say, yes, I have a problem, I need help, there's going to be little or no change in that mm-hmm. marriage. Mm-hmm. So things began to, you know, surface, you know, more lies about his past. I would catch lies and catch him in lies. I would catch him in all kinds of just inconsistencies. And then he began to subtly want to control things that I would do. So for instance, at the time, this is before I met him, before I became a law enforcement officer, I told him I wanted to be, you know, go, you know, apply to become a cop. And it was something that I'd wanted to do as a child. And he wasn't so happy about that. And, he tried to put in any excuse, you know, every excuse is that why it wouldn't work for me. And I said, you know, I'm sorry, because this is what a lot of people also misunderstand is usually, you know, it's not always the victim in these cases isn't always somebody who's passive and just, you know, oh, poor me situation. I was mm-hmm. extremely feisty. I was very mm-hmm. strong-willed. Mm-hmm. But he was so good at manipulating things in my life. And so when he told me I shouldn't be a cop, I'm like, you can't tell me what to do.
Right.
I'm going to apply.
Sure. And
in his mind, he thought, oh, you know, you're this, because I'm 5'4", 120 pounds. I'm this little bitty thing. Mm-hmm. And I think in his mind, he didn't think that I could get in. And so then he gave me his blessing and, okay, fine. I think, you know, you could do this. And so I got in the very first time that I applied and I tested and got into the academy. And then things really started to shift after that. So for instance, he would take issue with me working out. You know, I wanted to be fit for my job. And, started thinking in his mind, I was working out so that I can look good for the other officers, right? Why? You just want to look good for these other cops and you're going to be working around all these men. And so little things like that. And I'm like, no, I want to be fit so that I can be good at my job, so that I can perform to the best of my ability. You know, then when I actually got into my first position there, I was working in the jail first with inmates and things like that. You know, it's not like a 9-to-5 job, right? So mm-hmm. sometimes there's incidents and you have to stay a little over, you have to write your reports and things like that. And if I were home a little late, it was an interrogation. Why were you late? What happened? Who were you messing with? And he started just accusing me of supposedly having affairs that I'm potentially, oh, you're probably having an affair with these deputies and things like that. And he would often pop by the jail because there's a little window that you can come to and drop things off just to kind of check on me. And everybody thought, oh my gosh, he's so sweet. He's bringing you food. He's bringing you whatever. And it was nice at first, but I know now that he was doing that to kind of check on me, right? To make sure that I was at work or wasn't doing anything wrong in his eyes. And oftentimes he would do that. And then he'll say, who was that guy that you were standing next to. Mm-hmm. And so this escalated after some time and escalated and escalated. And then it turned into, you know, just controlling the money, right? So, you know, we would have arguments, and if there was any kind of discussion about divorce or even splitting up, he would pull money out of the account because we had a joint account and say, well, you know, if you're going to leave me, then I'm going to leave you with no money. So financial abuse is very real in these situations where they attempt to control you by financially abusing you, by pulling funds from you or not allowing you to access money, right? Mm-hmm. And he would say things like, well, how are you going to buy food for the girls, and how are you going to pay the mortgage and things like that? So those kinds of things began to happen. And then there was, he was addicted to pornography, and I didn't find that out until later. I'd caught him a couple of times with, you know, watching pornography and with porn magazines and things like that. So that was another big stressor in this marriage. And so along with that, a little bit of what I didn't recognize then was that there was some sexual abuse happening as well. You would think me being a cop, I would know, you know, this was a clear sign of abuse, but I guess it didn't register to me that it was abuse. So these things started happening. And then when that kind of abuse started happening, it triggered a lot of those childhood memories of me being abused as a child. And this is something I had tucked away deep down inside for a long time. Mm-hmm. And they were just, these raw feelings were coming out. And I thought, gosh, I need to tell somebody, because nobody knew what happened to me. Mm. And I thought, well, I'll tell my husband, maybe he'll take some kind of compassion. maybe it'll help him not do these things anymore. So I talked to him, and I said, you know, when you do these things, it triggers some very, very bad moments in my life. And I've never shared this with anyone, but I'm going to share this with you. And it was pretty interesting, because when I shared this with him, I'm in tears. He began to cry. And we just started crying together, and he apologized. I'm so sorry. I didn't know that you went through something like that. And I thought, wow, this is good. This is good. You know, this is going to help us exposing, you know, these things, and maybe he'll work on getting better. Unfortunately, that only lasted like a couple of weeks, and then he started again, and then he would use that abuse against me. So now it was, I have issues. You have problems. You've never worked on your issues. This is why our marriage is so messed up. So these things just escalated until I just, you know, I had spoken to a friend, and she said, this is domestic violence, Doris. This is domestic violence. And I was like, well, he doesn't hit me, you know?
Yeah.
And she says, you don't understand. This is abuse. Mm-hmm. And in the academy, you go through domestic violence calls, but never the dynamics of domestic violence, right? They just tell you how to respond to a call, how to separate the subjects, how to keep everyone safe, charge the one who is committing the crime, right? Mm-hmm. But they don't, at the time, they did not talk about what the signs of abuse were or anything like that. So I still, and I felt so silly, so dumb, because I did not know. Mm-hmm. And she had me talk to a confidential advocate, and this confidential advocate, along with my friend, were the first to validate for me that I was in fact in an abusive relationship. So when that happened, that's when I kind of formulated a plan as to, okay, I'm going to get away from this guy. I can't allow my daughters to think that this is okay. Cause you know, even though he was very slick, he often tried to do it at night when they were sleeping, but our kids are so smart. They know more than what we like to give them credit for.
Yep.
And our children suffer just as much, even some even more than we do when we're in abusive relationship. And so I said, I cannot allow my daughters to think that this is okay and carry this into their own lives. I need to end this somehow. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I went into trying to escape him, which was a really difficult thing that almost ended in my life being taken. But I'm grateful for that, because I don't know what would have happened if I had not gotten away at all. So,
yeah, that is, that's incredible. So it must have been crazy being a law enforcement officer. You know, like you said, you weren't some like meek, mild, shy woman. I mean, you know, you were tenacious. You were, you know, you went after this career that, you know, a lot of women wouldn't go after, because they frankly probably would be scared. Like, why would I be a cop? You know, there's a bunch of big bad guys out there. But you like went headfirst into a career that had to be crazy. I assume in your mind, being a tough cop, but also realizing, hey, I'm going home to somebody who's completely controlling me. During the day, I'm controlling, like I am on patrol, making sure people are under control. But at home, I don't feel like I'm in control. That must have been crazy.
It was so difficult, considering that. And I think that part of why I didn't speak up earlier was due to that, because I thought, wow, if I share that this is going on in my own home, what kind of cop does that make me? You know, am I going to be viewed as being weak? Am I going to be viewed as being someone who can't handle these types of cases, right? Because I myself am in one of those situations. So that was tough. I didn't want to share that with anyone for the longest time, because I thought, gosh, I can't, what if it ruins my career? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, and it's so funny that you say that, because when I would put on my uniform, it was pretty empowering, right? Mm-hmm. It was empowering. It was something, like you said, that I felt like I can control. This was, you know, wow, I feel so empowered putting on this uniform. But then behind that badge, it was the real me at home, you know, where I had insecurities, I had baggage, emotional junk that I'd never dealt with. And I was being controlled at home by my husband. So that was extremely difficult for me to overcome. You know, I think I kind of, you know, after he started doing some things that were pretty obvious to a lot of people that I worked with, I said, you know, I have to say something, because he would call me nonstop. And if I wouldn't answer, he would just continue to call. You know, and he would leave an angry message. Why aren't you calling me back? You know, literally, you know, I was working in the jail and I would be in a physical altercation with a drunk person, right? Mm-hmm. And he's trying to call, you know, and then I have to explain to him that this is why I didn't call you back. And it was never good enough for him. And so, you know, and I was this small petite thing, and, you know, I was part of a tactical team at the time. And so I felt really strong in that sense, but I was extremely weak in my personal life. And now, you know, I didn't know how to control that part of my life. Mm-hmm. I sort of thought that I was stuck in that. And it took a lot of encouragement from my good friend, Karen, who was also a cop at the, you know, at the time, to do something about it. And mostly I did it for my girls as well, because, you know, my daughter, Selena. Selena was about 10 at the time and Cynthia was about 5. And like I said earlier, your children are smarter than what you give them credit for. They know what's mm-hmm. going on, even mm-hmm. though you think that you're covering it up. They know what's going on. They are being just as affected. She did come to me, my oldest, and she was in tears. And this was when he wasn't around. And she said, Mom, I know that you guys fight. Mm. hear you guys fighting all the time. Every night I hear you guys fighting. And I said, well, how do you, you know, I thought, I'm thinking she's sleeping. And she, this part makes me a little emotional. Doesn't matter how many times I share it. So she said, Mom, I am so scared for you. She says, I sit outside of your door, bedroom door with a phone because I want to make sure that I call the police if he hurts you. Wow. And I, it was just so shocking for me to hear that. Cause I thought, Mama, he's not going to hurt me. He's, you know, and she's never seen him hit me or anything like that. Like I'm in my mind, I'm thinking, well, he's never hit me, but here's this 10-year-old little girl recognizing that there's that danger, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That I didn't even recognize. And so after that, I said, no, no more. I'm not going to continue in this. I cannot continue in this. Little did I know that there was some abuse happening with her too, behind closed doors when I wasn't around. So he was threatening her. And so, you know, telling her, if you tell your mom, I'm going to kill her and I'll kill this whole family. And he was threatening her that way. And I found this out later on. And so there was so much going on that I had no clue about. And I just, you think that just because, you know, I was a police officer, I've gotten comments like, you should have known better. How did you not know? Well, until you're in the shoes of someone who goes through this, you don't know. You just don't know. I wish I did. I wish I had that discernment. I wish that I could have, you know, other than there's something not right about this guy, right? I just couldn't put my finger on it. And I didn't have enough self-confidence, I guess, to believe my intuition. And as I call it today, is the Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit was trying to guide me, trying to lead me in a safe direction. And I was just going against it each time, going against it. And so, because I second guessed myself, always pay attention to that first initial gut feeling, right? You know, what I call now is the Holy Spirit just trying to give you that discernment that this person isn't safe, because I had those feelings. I felt it. I just couldn't explain it away. And so I wish I had paid attention to that. So, but when I finally did separate from him, we had separated a few times here and there. He would go and stay at his mom's house when we'd had these fights. So it happened often. I'd always take him back, but this time, after I found some more pornography stuff, I told him, I can't do this. He cried and I'm so sorry. I know I have a problem, that kind of thing. And I said, well, I need you to leave. I need a break. But I knew that I wasn't gonna take him back this time. He did not know that, because it happened so often. And so once he left to go stay at his mom's, and he'd always, in previous times, he would, threaten suicide if I didn't take him back, which is another reason why I took him back so many times, because, you know, in my mind, I just thought, I'm like, oh, I can't have him do this. Like I would blame myself. I would feel so guilty. But he'd often threaten suicide just to control the relationship. And I thought at the time that he would do it. I do know now it was a manipulation tactic, but this time around I was like, no. And so once he realized that I wasn't taking him back again, the threats of suicides came back. And I said, you know, God forbid you do something like that. But if you do, I'm not going to blame myself. That's your choice. And I would tell him things. And he got so angry. And he was just, you know, I went ahead and changed the locks in my house. I had set up a different account, you know, a bank account. I did all of these things to prepare me for this moment. I told my supervisors what was happening, because now he was threatening my job, saying that he would lie so that I can get fired. He hacked into my email accounts for work, trying to get me in trouble. All kinds of things that he did. There's so much that I can share, but it would be all day.
Sure.
And then after he realized he couldn't come back and that I had changed locks and things like that, because he did try to come back, he just started stalking me and threatening me even more. And I had to get a restraining order after that. And this was the second time I attempted to get a restraining order. The first time I was denied because there was no physical abuse or outright threats. But this time the magistrate did grant me one and didn't hear from him for about a week. And I thought, thank you, God. He's out of my life. Mm-hmm. But what I didn't realize is that he was planning this whole week what his next step would be. And so June 26, 2006, I came home from work and it was about 10:30 at night because and I was on what they call light duty because I had a sprained ankle from a training incident. And so he knew all this. He had been stalking me. I don't know how he knew all of these things. He knew I wasn't wearing my wedding band. He knew all of these things. I have no idea how he knew it. And so I came home from work. I was in civilian attire because I was on light duty, didn't have my weapon on me. But as I come to my home, I'm thinking, okay, I'm safe now. My mom had actually lived with me at the time. She would be in the basement, in the finished basement area of the house. And so she stayed with my girls and I let her know, hey, just like the plan that we had, the escape plan that we had, I would call my mom when I would leave work, say, Mom, I'm on my way home, because I knew he had been stalking me. I knew he was threatening me. So I'm on my way home. It should take me about 15 minutes. I would do these things. I would change routes, everything you needed to do. He obviously knew where we lived because we lived together. So I got home and I looked at the driveway. I was going to get onto the driveway, but unfortunately it was blocked. But in my mind, I'm like, I'm home. I'm safe.
Sure.
You know, yeah. I'm home. There was a big old trash can on my driveway, sitting in the middle of my driveway with the red letters ACE on it. And I'm thinking, whose trash can is that? And why is it in the middle of my driveway? So I went and parked on the opposite side, which is closer to a house that was vacant. Strategically, no, the windows didn't have a view of that space. And so as I exit my car to look at this trash can and why it's sitting on my driveway, I see him come up from underneath the steps in front of my house, because there's some little steps going up to the house. He was hiding underneath the steps because there was an opening. And, you know, he was just dressed in black with a baseball cap. And at first I didn't know who he was, but then instantly I knew it was him. You know, once I saw him kind of turn that silhouette, I just knew it. And I'm thinking, what are you doing? What are you doing? You were in front of my house. What do you think you're going to do? And he grabbed my arm and he said, you're coming with me. And I said, no, I'm not. And I flung it back. I said, I'm not going with you. And he had a gun hiding behind his back. And so he grabbed me again and he said, no, you're coming with me. And I can't even explain how many thoughts went through my mind in that moment. It was just like a zillion thoughts in just that moment. Like, what am I going to do? My girls are in there. My mom is in there. I had to make a split second decision. You're told never, never to allow somebody to kidnap you and take you to a second place, because your chances of surviving that is very, very slim. But if I tried to fight him off with him having a gun pointed at me, then my chances of survival is pretty slim. And not just that, he can go after my family.
Right.
And so I told him, okay, I'll go with you. I'll go with you. I'll go with you. And I just said, please, you know, and I just asked him to please, please think about what you're doing. And so he had parked all the way up the street and I'm thinking, somebody's got to see me, even though it was dark. I'm like, please, somebody come out. Somebody see this. And nobody. And I was too scared to scream or anything like that. Again, I did not want my family. I know him, and I know he would try to get to my family just to get to me, if that makes sense. Hurt them just to hurt me.
Yep.
There was a little incident about that prior to that, too, where he tried to set one of my daughters up. So I went, and long story short, he ended up raping me that night. He took me to this very secluded place in the middle of a train track, and I thought he was going to kill me. And people often ask me, you know, you were taught in self-defense. You were taught all of these things, how to stay safe. Why didn't you fight back? Honestly, I was paralyzed.
Yeah.
I was paralyzed. I could not, I was in shock. I literally was paralyzed. I felt like I was that 7-year-old little girl that was being abused. I couldn't do anything. All I could do was cry. All I could do was cry and beg him not to take my life. But by the grace of God. By the grace of God.
Yes.
I was able to escape. And my goodness, that is a book in itself. How God came through. You see, and people ask me why I'm so... Everything about my life now revolves around Jesus. Everything. You hear that saying that those who have been forgiven much, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Forgive much and love him and are grateful. And that's why, because he didn't have to come and save me.
Yes.
This part is, these are tears of joy. Trust me when I say this.
Yes, yes.
I had been so far from him. I had not prayed in years. I did not even want to be close to him. But in these moments when I cried out to him, he actually listened, and he literally just picked me out from that pit. You know, like David in the Psalms, he lifted me out,
yes,
out of the pit of despair, and he saved me. And I cannot tell you how it's really difficult to explain in words that supernatural sense of just peace and comfort and protection. Like, it was amazing. And I just knew after I cried out to God, in a moment, you know, within that scenario, there was a time where, I was able to cry out to God, and he allowed me to go into a convenience store bathroom after he inspected it and things like that. Long story short, but I just sat in that bathroom and I just cried out to the Lord. And I said, God, I know this is not what you planned for me. And if you're real, I need you to save me. My girls need me.
Yeah.
And it was like this instant peace. And supernaturally, I was able to escape that situation. It was soon after that where my ex dropped the ball. You know, he was so meticulous in everything he was doing. And in that moment, after that prayer and after that experience I had with Jesus, he dropped, like, he wasn't as meticulous, and he made some mistakes and it allowed me to escape. And I don't even know how I got home. Honestly, I just don't. I jumped in that car. I couldn't even reach the pedal, but I just kept saying, Lord, get me home, get me home, get me home. And I got home safely, and the police were waiting for me because they were searching for me. This has been hours that I was missing. My mom and my daughter, my oldest daughter, saw the car that I had parked it, but I wasn't inside. So they immediately called the police, and they immediately started a search. And they caught him the following day hiding in his dad's home, hiding in the kitchen cupboards of his dad's home. And he's been in prison ever since. But I'm grateful, because I oftentimes, you know, the story doesn't end that way for a lot of victims. Unfortunately, many victims are murdered. Or murder suicide, which is what I thought he would do. And, you know, I used to drive myself crazy about, you know, God, why did I live and why did this person not live? But I can't do that anymore. I guess it's called survivor's guilt.
Yeah.
But now I'm just grateful. You know, there was a purpose for why I'm here. There's a purpose why I'm here. There's a purpose as to why I survived that. And the devil couldn't have me that night. The devil couldn't have me that night. And this is why every breath that I take, I'm grateful for, and everything that I can do in life to glorify God and help people in any way that I can is what I do, because I'm so grateful for him taking this lowly person, this person that had been so far from him, and saving me from that situation.
Man, there's a, you think about it, and like we talked before the show, you know, we're either been in the church or we're positioned in the church. And so you said something in your story where you said, well, I'm a cop. I don't want this to look bad on my job. Do you think it's the case a lot of times? Because you'd ask, well, why stay? Like, why not? Like, for someone who hasn't experienced it, those are going to be the normal questions, because we just don't understand. Why can't you just leave? Why wouldn't you leave? Why, when you notice the signs, why wouldn't you? Do you think a lot of it is just the fear of failure of yourself, the fear of failing somebody else, the concern of what others may think is just so much more powerful than the realistic reality of what you're going through in that moment? Or
absolutely. I think for me, that was the case. But there's a lot of reasons why, right? So if you think about the church, you know, I've done a lot of work around the churches and domestic violence and support groups within the church for these situations. And I kind of wanted to, you know, I want to kind of zone in on that a little bit. Within the church, the reasons that I've heard is, what is the church going to think of me? Well, they're not going to believe me because he's a deacon. Or they're not going to believe me because he's a pastor. He's very well respected in the church. These kinds of things are often reasons, or what, you know, they're just going to tell me I need to pray more. They're just going to tell me I need to be more submissive. Maybe I'm not being submissive enough. Maybe I'm not being a good wife. But absolutely, the fact that as much as we say, oh, well, I don't care what people think, most of us do, especially when we have insecurities. We do care what others think. And, you know, the older you get, the less that is. But when you're in that situation, that is powerful, that, you know, and not in a good way, but it does kind of keep you stuck in these situations where, you know, and of course, within the church, you know, scriptures, you know, that God hates divorce and all of these things that are thrown at you. And, you know, some, you know, in the church, you know, you don't want to go against God's word. And maybe some of these people in the church don't necessarily understand the context around some of these verses, right? Or maybe they're just not, they don't know how to interpret the word so much. And so they just hear these little one pieces of scripture, right? Yes. So wives, you must submit to your husbands. But, you know, like in Ephesians 5, where it says, you know, wives submit to your husbands, but they don't look a little further into the chapter where it says, husbands,
love your wives,
yes, right?
Yeah.
And treat her as Christ loves the church, without blemish, right?
Yes.
Do not speak harshly to your wife. Mm-hmm. Those are powerful verses. And so whenever I hear that piece about being submissive and all of these things, I say, okay, well, let's look a little further into that chapter and see what else it says, right? So I try to break that down into, hey, you know, we have our part, but they have their part too, right? In this marriage. And there's that mutual respect that needs to happen in this marriage. And Jesus didn't, you know, tell us that, you know, we have to just be a doormat, right?
Right. Nope.
So it's really that spiritual abuse again. That's another sign that's huge. In the church, where you're picking and choosing verses to try to control your spouse. Mm-hmm. And churches are not immune to abuse. We're not immune to abuse. It happens often. I heard it one time. I'm not sure if this is a recent statistic, that 1 in 7 families in the church are experiencing domestic violence in their household. I think that's low, considering 1 in 4 women experience it and 1 in 7 men experience it. So I think the 1 in 7 in the church is probably low. I think it's more that we just don't hear about, but happens often. And unfortunately, you know, pastors, God bless them, you know, are not equipped to handle those kinds of things sometimes. I think it's getting a little better these days, but what I tell pastors is, hey, you know, I understand, you know, you want to help these people, you know, and all of that. But if you're not very well versed with the dynamics of domestic violence, maybe you should refer this person to someone who is, instead of you saying you need to pray more.
That's right.
You know, praying more, prayer is powerful. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. That's your first line of defense, right?
Sure.
Or it is your first line of defense. But maybe say, okay, you know, along with this, we're going to connect you with someone who's a little bit more well-versed in this area, mm-hmm. So that they can help you kind of, first of all, validate that this is an abusive relationship, right? Because mm-hmm. a lot of times we deny it, we're in denial. And then second of all, okay, what can we do from here on out? Not every domestic violence relationship is exactly the same. It can't, you know, there's a lot of very similar things. I'll often say that there are a couple of different kinds of abusers. There are the kinds that maybe they grew up in that kind of lifestyle. That's what they know. Mm-hmm, that's right. How they've learned to treat their spouse. And so it's normal to them, right? It's kind of like, hey, this is just the way we do things. This is just the way I grew up. This is the way that marriages work. And cyclical, right? And at some point, you hope to break that cycle. And then there's the other category of abusers. And this category is, and forgive me for saying this, I don't want to scare people, but it's almost demonic. It's very...
It's not almost, it is.
Exactly. It is. So and I, sometimes when I speak like that, people get a little freaked out, but...
No, the enemy
has a huge play in this.
Yes.
Right? His whole purpose, the enemy's purpose, is to break up the family unit.
Yes. I mean,
that's his goal from the beginning of time.
Yes.
He wants to divide the woman and man. He wants to divide the family. That's his whole goal. This is how disaster happens in our world, right? It starts within the family unit.
Yes.
And so there's that second category that are just... It is demonic, and they're sociopaths, and it's not that they just grew up in it.
Right.
It's that they have like this goal to control, and they get off on it. It's so weird. Mm-hmm. So that was the abuser that I had, unfortunately. And so there is hope for those who can just say, wow, maybe I just never thought that this is not how a marriage works.
Right.
Because it is difficult for an abuser to, people say, you know, well, abusers are always going to be abusers. And unfortunately, statistically, that's been the case. But there is that group where they just didn't learn any better. Right. Mm-hmm. And if they can take responsibility and get some good help, right. And really dig into, you know, therapeutic type of ways and spiritual type of ways to handle that, they can actually get out of that, right? But it's a lot harder for these that are influenced demonically for the, you know, you can do a delivery session, or a deliverance session, I don't know. However, for some reason, I don't see a lot of those abusers break away from that cycle. Unfortunately, they end up in jail. They end up taking their own lives. There's so much there. So, but there is hope. I don't want to say that there's no hope for somebody to get out of that, but you don't have to stay in this dangerous relationship until they get that help. It is unsafe. If you know this person is unsafe, if you know this person has the potential to hurt you or your children, and it's not safe, I don't believe God expects you to stay in there. That's until right. This person is supposedly fixed.
That's right.
Your safety, right? The safety of your children and yourself is important.
Yeah.
And you can pray and you can pray for them, and you can maybe throw resources at them and things like that. But safety, your safety is important to you, to us, and your safety is important to Jesus. I truly believe that Jesus wants you to be safe.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and this may sound weird to some people, but one of the things that I told my wife early on in our marriage was, and while I'm thinking normally and everything is okay, I said to her, I said, if I ever get to a point where I am not myself, I am repeatedly doing things that you know I should not be doing, or I'm just out of control. I'm not listening. God's not the head of my life anymore. Like, just things that she would see. I said, you have 100% right. And I want you to go to my pastor and expose me. I said, whatever pastor that we're under at that particular time, please. And I said, don't tell me you're going to do it. Just do it.
Right.
I said, because it's safety for you, but it's also, it could save my soul in the end.
Yeah.
Don't let me spiral out of control. Like, right. Go and expose me. And because that's the biggest thing, right? We don't want to be exposed, right? And obviously, and she knows, I'm not saying every little thing I do, you know, I'm not going to be perfect.
Right.
But when it's outside of who she knows that I should be,
yes,
she needs to have the outlet to know, hey, and I told you to do it. So he could, you know, if you go to him and I don't know it, and he approaches me or whatever the case may be, whatever happens there, that's your outlet. Because I don't want to ever get into a situation where you're in danger, which I don't think that would ever happen, obviously. But, you know, things happen with people. You know, I they say hurt people, you know, and you talk about the things that are bottled up and things that you never thought, like all kinds of things, you know, and you don't know what's going to happen in life and how you're going to react to things when they do happen. And right. So, you know, as a safety net, and I would just encourage other husbands to maybe do something like that. I'm not, you know, saying that that's the standard here. I'm just saying, you know, be open, be honest, be vulnerable, and allow yourself to be exposed when things are not right. Because right. At the end of the day, sin and evil festers in darkness.
Yes.
And this is why the devil love, you know, the Bible says that, you know, men love darkness rather than light because their deeds are evil. And so, you know, keeping things, not saying anything, because, well, I don't want my husband, you know, my husband's a pastor, my husband's a deacon, he's on the board, he's the CEO of name your company, right? That's not more important than the safety of yourself, the safety of your children, the legacy of your family,
right.
His own health and well-being. I mean, it's nothing materialistic is that important.
Absolutely.
And so we have to make sure that we're bringing, and that's why we bring these things up on our show, because we want these things to be brought to the light, and we want victims to know that they do have a voice and they don't have to stay in darkness, because the longer you keep this thing hidden, the longer it's not going to stop.
You're right.
You know, so I just, you know, I think one of the things that blessed me so much, Doris, and this is for any person who survives a horrific event, it can be taken two ways. You could have taken this whole situation and said, God, why? Why me? And I'm not saying that there were not some of those human thoughts at some point, right?
Yeah.
But your end goal, the end of it could have been, you know what? I will never serve God. Because if God is so good and he allowed this to happen, why would I want to serve a God? I mean, we hear those types of things, but that was still the mercy and the grace of God, who caused you to run to him, mm-hmm. instead of running away from him. But you ran to him and you said, hey, God, I need you. Like, I can't do this. Like, it just blesses me when that happens, because it's so sad when a person goes through horrendous things like you went through and then turn around and serve the very person who caused that to happen to them, because their heart is now hardened towards God.
Yes.
You know, and the devil loves that, because it's just a double negative. You know, You know, and that's, God is here to restore us. He's here to bring light. Everything that is the opposite of evil, all the things that are good. And that's why, you know, you said, and you know, we talk about this on the show too, is bad theology, just misguided theology. You can't divorce. You should not divorce for any reason. Like the Bible says, except for infidel, like, okay, let's, you know, the Bible is not going to name every single solitary thing on the planet. You know, if your husband is molesting your daughters, you should not be with your husband.
Right. Right.
But, I mean, God has also given us common sense.
Yes.
He spoke about that specific thing because that's what he was taught. He was bringing us higher, saying, hey, you know, if a man looks on a woman to lust after her, he's already committed adultery in his heart. He says, well, you said that we could, you know, there's the Bible. Jesus at that particular time was trying to bring us up higher, right? Not to cover every single solitary issue that would ever happen.
Right.
That is common sense. If you're being beat, if you're being verbally abused to where you can't function as a mother or a wife, or you're whatever the case may be, and these are things, a person is unrepentant, a person's not, and I'm not advocating, because I have a lot of pastors that listen to this show, I am not advocating for divorce at every turn, somebody does something wrong. Mm-hmm. But I am talking about when you are in immediate danger, or your children are in danger. There's no common sense that will tell you that you're supposed to stay in that. And what God would tell you to stay in that? He just wouldn't.
Absolutely. And I tell you, Kevin and Kyle, I'm sure there's been more than one, but there was a time, and I don't remember how exact long ago, but there was a pastor who was counseling a wife who was in an abusive relationship, and he kind of convinced her to stay and pray for her husband. And the husband was a well-respected man in the church, wasn't a deacon or anything like that. But well, this went on for a long time, and she took this pastor's, and please don't say that, you know, don't think that I'm saying that you shouldn't listen to your pastors. That's not what I'm saying. I'm talking about this specific issue when you're in a dangerous situation where it could potentially physical harm, right?
Yes.
Or death, God forbid, which sometimes we don't think it would go that far, but trust me, it can. These situations can go that far. My situation was emotional and psychological abuse. He never laid a hand on me, and he took it as far as almost killing me. So it can happen if it's a situation that bad. But this woman was told by her pastor not to leave. And sadly, tragically, she ended up being killed by her husband. So please be careful when you counsel people who are in these situations. Safety, safety, safety first. The safety of those children and that person in that situation. I know that I believe that Jesus would put your safety above anything else in these situations. And so just keep that in mind. If you're not equipped to counsel these people or point them in the right direction, if they're in these abusive relationships, maybe you're like, I don't know how to, you know, I'm a pastor. I know how to pastor. I know how to counsel, but this is out of my expertise, or this is out of my comfort zone. It's okay to refer these yes. people out to somebody who knows how to handle that situation, who knows how to help these people. So just keep that in mind as you counsel the people of your church. And it's okay to talk about these things.
Right.
Like you said, Kevin, it's okay to expose this darkness. That's how you bring these things to light. And that's how you kind of defeat the enemy in these situations, is that you expose this stuff, right? And the more that we expose it, I think the more you'll see these things come to light, and less of it can happen within the church and in the community. So
and you got to remember, if you are going through it, maybe you don't even know you're going through it, or maybe you may think you just listening to the story can be on the verge of abusing. A way out doesn't necessarily just mean escape. Way Out can be help for both. And I know, you know, we talk about Jesus. The Jesus I read about, he approached things, he did things through love.
Yeah.
And it was love for both sides. There was never one person against the other or one section against the other. It was that there was a victim and there was a criminal, but both deserved love and they deserve a chance at it. And so I just feel like, especially in homes, I think especially with the enemy, controlling the narrative is always going to be the number one key. If you can control the narrative, you can control the perspective. If you're someone who's being affected by somebody else controlling your narrative, that's a sign in itself. And if you're somebody who finds yourself trying to give excuse and trying to control the narrative so you don't look bad, that's a sign in itself. And so I think just out of this story, that's on the basis of anything. You don't know what the future is going to hold physically, emotionally, verbally, but what you do know is in the now, that if someone's controlling your narrative or if you're trying to control someone's narrative, there's a reason for that. And there's toxicity all around that. So you need to get to the root of that. And if the root of that is separating yourself from that individual, whether it's for a period of time so that both of you can get help, because already at that point, you've been wounded too as a victim because you have been just controlled and lied to and manipulated. And manipulation is huge. Mm-hmm. I don't know that that's covered enough in any discussion when it comes to abuse. Mm-hmm. But if you are someone who manipulates, you're abusing somebody. And if you're somebody who's been manipulated, you change the way you live out of that manipulation.
Right.
And I've been on both sides of that. And it's a shame to say that I've manipulated a situation out of shame, whether it's an argument or a disagreement or trying to make an excuse to something. It's still abuse. It's still going to leave damage in some sort of way. And you've got to right that wrong. So I think out of this story, what I've taken out of is we can recognize it right off the bat when someone's trying to control a narrative. I mean, from the beginning of time, Satan did it. Okay. He literally tried to control the narrative of what God was saying to his creation.
Yes.
And so it's evil. And that's why I said it's demonic, because it's evil. I mean, there's agendas and there are plans, and we don't necessarily wrestle all the time against flesh and blood. And the Bible is very clear about that. But there's principalities, there's rulers of darkness of this air. And you hit it on the head when you talked about the unity of the home. And we could go on for hours about even now what this nation is facing in the unity of the home. And we'll do that eventually on this show. But Satan knows, and the enemy knows, is if he can go after the identity of the home, it is so much easier to go after personal, individual identities after that. And so I think you hit it on the head perfectly with that. And so if you're listening, take note. We're not saying, listen, don't go home and be like, my husband or my wife, I need to get a list down of what they're doing. But you know, listening to this, you know, if you've, because it's triggered some things. And so just be aware and be vigilant in knowing that it's out of love that you want help for yourself, but you want help for the other person.
Mm-hmm. And don't deny it. Like, because the first reaction when you feel like this could be your spouse or you feel like you're the person, the first reaction is going to be to deny it. No. I'm just taking this too serious. I'm in my emotions. Whatever the case may be, please, as Doris said, you have a gut feel like you, and which we now know, if you're listening to us, you're a Christian, is the Holy Spirit. Right.
Yep.
I can't tell you how many times people ask me, well, Kevin, how do you hear from the Spirit of God? What does that sound like? And I always say he uses your own five senses. Like not some outside mystical thing that happens. So when you have this gut feeling like, oh my gosh, that's me, or oh, that's my husband, like whatever mm-hmm. that feels like, right? He's going to use your five senses to speak to you. And, you know, you've got to pay attention to that. And I know it's hard. I know it's embarrassing. I know it's, you know, all of these things, but you can't let all of those things come in and block you from getting help. So if you're listening, please just don't excuse it anymore. Get help. And some of the common things, and we're getting ready to wrap up here because I want to be, you know, respectful of Doris's time today. But, is some of the things is, you know, if I would just submit, this would stop. Horrible, horrible way to think. You know, my husband's in ministry. We talked about that. And I don't want him to lose his job. You know, this really doesn't happen in Christians' homes. I haven't really heard of this happening to anybody else in my church, you know, so this just must be some, I must be wrong or weird or something's wrong with me, or just internalizing it and feeling like it's your fault. Like you feel like, well, but if I was a better wife, if I could just cook better, if I was a better mother, if I would just have had that career that he wanted me to have, or if I would just quit my job, or if like whatever the demands are or the manipulation is, you know, none of that's true. You have to understand none of that is true. What's true is your husband should be treating you as Christ loved the church, especially if you're a Christian. That, I mean, that's plain in the Bible. So if that's not happening, and we're all going to fall. We're all going to make mistakes. We're not all going to be perfect, right? That's not what we're saying.
Right.
But if it's outside the pale, you're being manipulated all the time. He's constantly at, where are you going? What's going on? I mean, he can't trust you. Like, yeah, come on, folks. This is not God. This is, you know, that's not God. And you're being verbally abused.
Right.
On a constant basis. Mm-hmm. The way he talks to you, if other people are going, I don't like the way he talks to you. Mm-hmm. When I'm around, like I feel like he's, and sometimes you don't even realize he's talking to you that way until somebody else says something. Right. So let's be cognizant of that. And Doris, I truly appreciate you coming on today. I really do.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
I don't take when people come on that are victim of any type of violence, I don't take that lightly, because sometimes it's just not easy to tell the story again. I don't care if you told it 70 million times. It's not easy. Sometimes it's a trigger for you. And so I just want you to know that I don't take it lightly, and I appreciate you coming on. And, you know, we're praying that this will cause so many other people to be free.
Amen. Amen. And can I add one more thing?
Yeah, of course.
God is so good. God is faithful.
He is.
And his promises are true for every one of his children that is willing to take that truth and say, I receive this, Lord. So when he says he heals the brokenhearted and he patches up your wounds, receive that. When he says that he'll take, you know, like Joseph, for, you know, the harm that you did for me, you intended to do me harm, but God intended it for good. Receive that, right? God will make, as crazy as this sounds, the enemy has his intentions. Mm-hmm. But if you surrender those things over to the Lord, God will make good out of it. Yes. I can't tell you what good came out of this situation. Not that that was God's original intention. I truly believe this was the enemy's plan the whole time.
Right.
But God.
Yes.
But God. He came in and he took the situation and he took this lowly person that didn't deserve his grace, didn't deserve what he did. And he shifted my life. I am healed. You can heal. Yeah. There's a lot of emotional damage that happens after you go through domestic violence or sexual abuse or whatever the enemy throws at your life, right? But healing is also just as real. And the enemy has this plan, but God is always going to overcome those plans as long as you surrender that. If you invite the Lord into your life, if you invite him into those wounds, even some Christians, unfortunately, don't understand that God can heal you. Mm-hmm. God is faithful to heal you if you just surrender. And if you don't know how to do that, ask him and he'll show you. If you don't know how to forgive, ask him and he'll give you the strength to forgive. I've been able to forgive him. Not that we're buddies. He's in prison. Have I ever gone and visited him? No, I pray for his soul. Yes. Mm-hmm. And I have forgiven him. I have not been led to go and visit or anything like that. That's not what I mean here. What I mean is that through that forgiveness, that you're able to extend someone who's hurt you, someone who's offended you, healing comes from that. There's a supernatural healing that takes place in your own life when you can extend that grace and that mercy, right? And I'm healed. Like, God is so good. I am full of joy. I have an amazing husband right now, who is everything that Jesus is to the church. And I'm grateful for that. And, you know, I have a beautiful family. I have a, you know, a new 10-year-old little boy. I say new, but my girls are doing good. There's been a lot of emotional stuff they needed to work through as well, but God is good. And never forget that God is faithful in getting you to where he, where you need to be. Just trust him, surrender it over to him. He'll guide you. He truly will.
I love hearing that. And, you know, I always say this, is that one of the best characteristics of God is he is a redeemer. I mean, that's really, that's who he is. I mean, think about what's happening right now. This whole time of this, we've been on earth, the humans have been on earth, is he's redeeming us back to himself. Like, that's the whole thing. And at the end, the total redemption story is going to be complete. Yes. That he got us all back. That's what he does. So it doesn't matter what situation you're going through, even though, like you said, the original situation was from the enemy. God didn't orchestrate it, but he takes that and then redeems it, flips it on his head. And in the face of the enemy, which is a powerful, like, we serve a powerful God that can take something that horrific and turn it into something so beautiful. So again, you know, this is a great, great, great thing that we've heard today. And Doris, so I want to make sure that people can follow you and reach you. So I know that we can go to DorisRiveraBlack.com. And Rivera is spelled R-I-V-E-R-A. So it's DorisRiveraBlack.com. And I know there's other places. So Doris, what are some of the other places that people can see you, get involved, and maybe some ministries that you're involved in?
Sure. So I actually have been terrible at this last year with COVID and all that. I'm a realtor here in Colorado Springs, Colorado. So I've been so busy with real estate that I have kind of neglected my Facebook pages and my social media stuff. But I'd like to get that going again. But you can find me on Facebook. If you just type in my name, I'll be on there. My speaker page is on there. There's a lot of great organizations that you can follow. I was recently, I'm not part of it anymore because I've been so busy, but I was recently part of Break the Silence Against Domestic Violence. And if you, even if you Google recently, I used to lead a All Hope Restored, which is a domestic violence support group. I haven't been doing that in a while, but there's a lot out there that people just don't realize. If you Google, type in your area, I'm pretty sure most areas will come up with some kind of local organization that can help you, and even ministries. So find me on Instagram, on Facebook. I do, you know, if you find me on my personal stuff, you're going to see that I just talk about real estate, Jesus, my family, and jujitsu, because I'm involved with Brazilian jujitsu and I'm obsessed with it. But so that's wow. You can see a lot of that. I'm very open to, you know, allowing people to follow my pages and stuff like that. And you know, I get personal messages a lot for people who need help, and I try my best to stay on top of those, or at least refer them to the right people, those kinds of things. So feel free to reach out anyway. And if I don't have the answers for you, then I can certainly point you in the right direction.
Awesome. Awesome. Awesome, Doris. Well, thanks again for coming on. We really appreciate it. And Kyle, tell them where to find us and all of our platforms.
Yeah, and you can also find us on Instagram and Facebook as well. Thinking Out Loud Podcast on Facebook. If you go to Instagram, it's thinking_outloud. We're also on Twitter as well. And so you can catch all of our advertisements, see who's coming up to speak. On the next week of the episode, usually we'll have, like Doris, we'll have her photo up and we will let you know about her story so that you know what episode is coming up. We have giveaways. We just did a giveaway about a week and a half ago. And so you can get us on social media. We also have a YouTube page. So if you want to see us in person, these videos will be up on YouTube as well. Thinking Out Loud Podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. And tell your friends, we're on every platform pretty much for podcasts. So Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, everywhere you consume podcasts. So we are super excited that you joined us again for another week. God bless you guys, and we will talk to you next week.